Okay. Once again, all members, welcome. I just went through who was present in the meeting and Gershon, I take it we are ready to go. All members, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, then just in terms of today's meeting, we expecting to deal with two pieces of legislation. The one is in relation to the IPED directors, the IPED amendment bill. Obviously, we want to deal with the adoption of the bill as well as the report. And thereafter, we'll deal with the electoral matters amendment bill. And I think we'll go into that at a later stage. That being said, let me also take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister of Police, who's on the platform. I think the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs as well is on the platform. Welcome to the two Deputy Ministers. We also have representation from the Civilian Secretariat for Police Services, who are in the meeting. I think so before we get to the next bill, I'll probably just see who else has joined us. I hope I haven't left anybody out for now. But once again, welcome to this meeting, one and all. The legal teams are present as well, welcome. And all other officials that are on the platform. On members, we're getting to the first agenda item, which is with regards to the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Amendment Bill. Members, in our last meeting, which took place on the 6th of March, 2024, we had further deliberations on the IPED Amendment Bill. Members recall Honorable Badenoch raised it in matters in respect of certain clauses of the bill, especially clause 3, where he indicated that it did not expressly stipulate that IPED is to be independent from SAP. Clause 4, with regard to the safeguards in guaranteeing the independence of the panel to be appointed by the minister, and he also indicated that the clause fell short to ensure that the panel itself will be appropriately qualified. He raised an issue around clause 13 as well, which seeks to place the determination of IPED investigators' conditions of service, salaries and allowances in the hands of the minister. But he also expressed the view that the bill fails to fulfill the requirements of the McBride case, and that should it be signed into law, it will most certainly be challenged in accord on the grounds that he mentioned. But furthermore, I think Honorable Zadovo had also made an input in, he had raised certain views on the bill as well, and that the bill had gone a long way to cure the defects that were identified by the Concord judgment in the McBride matter, and that he also indicated that the IPED independence is supported and strengthened by the bill, and that necessary systems and structures be put in place to ensure that at the end of the day, IPED is effective and it accomplishes its objectives. And with regard to the appointment of the panel, he also noted that the bullet has addressed the issues and that relevant regulations existed when you appoint a panel to consider an appointment. He also spoke about the requisite skills and expertise as well as qualifications of the people appointed would be considered in that process. And he also raised support for the bill. The department as well responded to issues that were raised by Honorable Badenoch and assured the committee that the bill adequately ensured that in times of the independence and impartiality, each organ of state will assist IPED to perform its functions effectively, but that did not mean that IPED is dependent on these organs. And the department also further clarified that appointments are guided by the legal framework and that salaries of investigators are taken out of the budget of SAPS, and this is not only decided by the minister. Now, most of these matters on members were also dealt with in another previous meeting that we held on the 28th of February. So, no members, we're actually at the point of adoption of the bill, but I think prior to that, what I would want to do is to invite Parliamentary Legal Services, if they're on the platform, if they have anything to add. Is the Parliamentary Legal Service Advisor on the platform for this bill?
Good morning, Chairperson. Bulelani Kamani is on the platform, Chair.
Yes.
He's on. Okay, Bulelani, if you have anything to add, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Good morning to everyone. Thank you, Chairperson. On our side, there is nothing further to add. We have made our submissions during the portfolio committee stages, we have nothing further to add from the Parliamentary Legal Services in regard to the bill. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Our members, is there anything further that you would want to add before we go into the adoption of the bill? Okay, if none, then our members, allow me then to table the bill without amendments for adoption. If I can get the mover for that.
I move, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Bartlett.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bartlett. Is there any second?
I second, Chair, Honorable Mthethwa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mthethwa. Are there any objections and or abstentions?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Democratic Alliance objects to this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Badenor. I think also, but that being said, on members, the bill is duly adopted without proposed amendments. In the last meeting as well, I should just also indicate that, Honorable Samaj.
I just want to say I'm all in because when I come in with iPhone 3, I'm not recognized.
Okay, but your name is reflecting, Honorable Matamar. But thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right, thank you. Honorable, also in the last meeting, members would have received the report of the committee on the matter. But what I've also raised in our last meeting was the DA requested that the minority view be included in the report. I think we subsequently sent a revised report to members, including that. But I'm going to request Gershwin then perhaps to take us quickly through the report before we deal with this adoption. Gershwin?
Good morning again, Chairperson, members and ministers. Chairperson, we're dealing with the report on the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Amendment Bill. And the bill was referred on the 5th of December. And then just the background is to amend the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Amendment Act and to provide for the matters as listed, Chairperson. And then, Chair, in terms of the public participation process, the committee invited stakeholders and interested persons to make written submissions and publish the advert in all official languages on Parliament's electronic platforms from 8 December to 26 January. This was also extended to 2 February. In summary, Chair, the committee received 7 submissions, Commission for Gender Equality, African Criminal Justice Reform, Gun Free South Africa, Western Cape Government, Institute for Security Studies, the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office, and the Africa Policing Civilian Oversight Forum. We've included the answer from the department's responses in the report, and that will be at the end of the report. And then, Chairperson, the committee, we received a briefing on the bill on 14 February 2024, and then a briefing on the submissions was presented on 28 February. The committee deliberated on the bill on 28 February and 6 March 2024, and there were no proposed amendments tabled. And then the committee on today would be proceeding to consider and adopt the bill and the report. Chairperson, in terms of the minority view, the Democratic Alliance rejected the iPIRD Amendment Bill, as it held the bill does not take to heart the pronouncements of the Constitutional Court, McBride versus Minister of Police and another, and does not go far enough to ensure iPIRD's institutional and operational independence. The Democratic Alliance held the view that the lack of independence in the appointment of the Executive Director does not contain sufficient safeguards in guaranteeing the independence of the panel to be appointed by the Minister to assist him in identifying suitably qualified candidates for the directorship. Clause 4 of the bill also fails to ensure the panel itself will be appropriately qualified. Furthermore, Clause 13 of the bill seeks to place the determination of IPED investigators, conditions of service, salaries and allowances in the hands of the Minister, while conditions of service are currently on par with members appointed as detectives in the SAPS. For these, among other reasons, the DA held that the Minister still has significant powers in terms of the Executive Director's appointment, failed to achieve the entrenchment of IPED's institutional and operational independence, and to make it expressly clear that IPED must be independent, impartial, and exercise its powers and functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Chairperson, I leave the recommendation in your hands. Chairperson?
Apologies, I didn't unmute. Thanks, Gershwin, for taking committee members through the report. Our members, just in terms of our recommendation on this report, having considered the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Amendment Bill B21, B2023, referred to the committee on the 5th of December 2023, specified by the JTM Section 75 Bill, recommends for council pass the bill without amendment. That would be our recommendation. Do you have any additions that you would want to make to the report and or corrections? Okay, if there are none, then allow me to table the report for adoption. Is there a mover for the adoption of the report?
I move Chairperson for the adoption of the report.
Thank you, Honourable Maleka. Any seconder?
I second the Chair.
Okay, Honourable Matamai and Honourable Bhatti, thank you very much. The report is duly adopted. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for that. We dealt with a very important bill. As I would say, an important watchdog role of the SAP, and as an institution, it should exert the necessary independence and impartiality in exercising its mandate and to secure public trust. We have been assured that the bill sufficiently addresses the McBride judgment, and we have satisfied ourselves that IFED will have the necessary independence and impartiality as a result of this bill. We particularly welcome clause 4, which provides for the appointment of a panel to assist the minister with the nomination of a candidate for the executive director post and the submission of the name of the candidate to the relevant parliamentary committee for approval. And we further understand that from our deliberation that the appointment of a panel will be guided by the legal framework dealing with the appointment of the panel, which also covers the qualifications of panel members. Let me take this opportunity on members to thank the public for their comments on the bill, as well as the Civilian Secretariat for Police Services and the Department of Police, and obviously yourself, members of this committee, and all the legal teams that provide support to this process. Thank you very much. Our members will then move to the third agenda item on our program, which is with regard to the Electoral Matters Amendment Bill. Just to indicate or to remind honourable members that just to give you a summary of the process to date. On members, you would be aware that, but if I even do that, Honourable Minister, Honourable DM, my apologies, I am just noting your hand.
No, I just wanted to request, Chair, if you may allow us to disconnect since our item has been attended to. But
you're welcome. Yeah. Okay, no, thank you, Minister. No, you're welcome, Honourable Minister. I keep forgetting that because I know sometimes we deal with more than one department.
It's understandable, Minister.
Okay, but thank you very much, DM.
Thank you, and thank you to committee members for the good work done. Thank you.
No, thanks, DM. Honourable Members, I had welcomed the DM for Home Affairs. I see representation of the IEC there as well on the platform. I was just wondering because I hadn't seen them earlier, but maybe I was mistaken. And I see officials as well from the Department of Home Affairs. Welcome to all of you. Honourable Members, as I was saying, You would be aware that the Electoral Matters Amendment Bill was passed by the NA yesterday and referred to the committee. But I thought it was important to provide or to remind members with a brief background, more a reminder of proceedings to date on this bill, which we as a committee had engaged on jointly with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And this was also due to the fact that there's an urgent need for this bill. And we had also at the time received legal advice that the two committees could process the initial stages of the bill jointly. At a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs held on the 4th of December 2023, the senior parliamentary legal advisor briefed the committee and indicated that joint processes do not happen often with legislation, except with finance committees on amendments to money bills. And the committee has assured that Rule 147 of the joint rules provided for such conferrals. The legal advisor assures the committee that the committee's draft legislative process will pass constitutional matters. However, she cautioned that if there are any material amendments, then the committee would have to, meaning the select committee, would have to consider another public participation process in the NCAP. But if there are no material amendments, then the draft legislative process could then unfold. On the first joint meeting on the briefing on the bill took place on the 12th of December 2023. And during this meeting, the processing of the bill was discussed, and it was agreed that the two committees would jointly host public hearings and jointly receive the briefing on the responses from the department and the IEC on the bill. The committee therefore jointly advertised the bill for public comments from the 13th of December 2023 to the 26th of January 2024. Members will recall that there were 13 submissions of the bill, of which 10 were of a substantive nature. The joint committee then met on the 6th of February 2024 to receive a presentation on the summary of submissions by the content advisors and to engage in joint public hearings on the bill. During the joint public hearings, 9 citizens and organizations made presentations to the joint committee. On their submissions. Thereafter, on the 9th of February 2024, the joint committee held a further meeting to receive the responses to the submissions from the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, the Department of Home Affairs, the Independent Electoral Commission, and the Parliamentary Legal Services. And in this meeting, the Department of Home Affairs requested to make a more substantive presentation in the next meeting of the joint committees, and this joint meeting took place then on the 14th of February 2024. Remember then after the joint meeting, which took place on the 14th of February, the select committee left the portfolio committee to continue with its deliberations on the bill on its own, with the understanding that the select committee would then continue with these deliberations after the adoption of the bill. Okay. During this process, honorable members, Parliamentary Legal Services had advised that even though the Electoral Matters Amendment Bill has been tagged as a Section 34 of the Financial Management of Parliament in Provincial Legislative Act has been amended, and that this may therefore affect the budget of provincial legislature. The committee was therefore advised to request provincial legislatures to comment on the bill. The committee then sent correspondence to all provincial legislatures to comment on the bill from the 12th to the 23rd of February. Since no comments were received, a further correspondence was sent to provincial legislatures on the 8th of March in respect of the B version of the bill, requesting that they comment by today, the 13th of March. And as soon as we receive their response, we will also share with committee members, but I think we do have a response from the KZN provincial legislature. So, Shane, if I'm not correct, please correct me. Now that the Portfolio Committee has deliberated on the bill and made amendments to the bill, which appear to be mainly technical and consequential in nature, but I think this matter will also further be clarified from the presentation that we'll receive, the second presentation that we'll receive this morning. We're going to receive, firstly, we'll kick off the process from where we stopped with the Portfolio Committee. Therefore, in today's meeting, we'll receive from the content advisor a summary of the clauses, comments and responses made, as well And then, in fact, thereafter, we'll then receive a presentation on the amendments which the portfolio committee made to the bill. And I'm hoping that these two presentations will assist the committee with its deliberations on the B version of this bill, which I can't express more, which is quite an urgent bill. Let me take this opportunity then on members being Vice Content Advisor, Mr. Salmon, to perhaps kick off the process by providing us with the summarized version of what transpired in our joint engagement to a certain point. Thereafter, I'll call on the Parliamentary Legal Services then to take us to the amendments that were made by the Portfolio Committee. And after that, obviously, I would also allow the Department of Home Affairs to make any additional input on the proposed amendments. And then committee members, you'll be given an opportunity to engage on the presentations and the matters that have been raised. That said, let me hand over then to Mr. Salmon Adam to take the committee then through the presentation. Adam?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and all colleagues. Yes, as the first Chairperson indicated, this is the process after the initial debate where we left the Select Committee as the Portfolio Committee. And the issues are raised just by the clauses where there were submissions and the responses, the related submissions, as well as the responses by the department, the IEC, and Parliament's Legal Services summarised so that members could make decisions, which were then reflected in the B Bill, which Talana will cover after I've done this summary. So initially there was a submission on Clause 3 around the definitions of an independent candidate and independent representative. And so the clause of the Bill is slighted here, but essentially the two definitions that were questioned were those of independent candidate and independent representative, and then donation and donation in kind. And the crux of the submissions were that simplifying the definition of independent candidate to exclude party membership as a qualifying criteria, and rather only excluding those that are nominated on party lists, so not just membership, which would be too exclusive. Secondly, submissions argued that the bill's definition of an independent candidate excludes party membership, while the Electoral Amendment Act does not. And then the name of the Multi-Party Democracy Fund changing to the Multi-Party and Independent Democracy Fund is unnecessary, as it is clear from the title what the fund is for. And the term donation and donation in kind should also reference independent candidates, not just representatives. The DHA and the Parliament Legal Services and the IEC, who are indicated in different colours in the rest of the presentation, all agreed that the independent candidate means a South African citizen contesting an election in terms of the Electoral Act who is not nominated on a list of a party. An independent representative means an independent candidate with representation in the national or provincial legislature. So a change to the definition to reflect the submissions. And then secondly, that donation and donation in kind should also reference independent candidates. So not just those who are actually elected, but those who are campaigning. And thirdly, a reference to independent candidate and an independent representative should also be made in Section 10 and an independent candidate in Section 14. And ultimately, there were more places than just those that needed addition, but those will be reflected in the bill. Secondly, we move to Clause 7. This clause is dealt with in its substance in Clause 29. We just indicate here that it's related, and it relates to the formula prescribed in terms of what the equitable allocation to weighted versus the proportional. So the substance of this will be dealt with in the later clauses, just indicating here that it's related to Clause 7. Then Clause 9 is on the use of funds, where there was a restriction on the use of the funds for personal use, as well as for litigation against the party or independent representatives. And so the submissions there were that the restriction unfairly restricts the ability to cover legal expenses. Currently, political parties are prevented from using funds to defray internal party disputes. It suggested that the existing ban on internal party disputes be retained and that parties be excluded from this proposal by one submission. Another submission proposed that the prohibited and allowed uses of donations should be equally applied to political parties and independent candidates, such as for legal costs or immovable property, and suggested creating a separate subsection equivalent to paragraph for litigation against the party. And then that the party private part and the Political Party Funding Act only refers to legal costs relating to internal party disputes and makes no mention of litigation against the party. The IEC agreed that the purpose of this section is to prohibit the use of money on intra-party disputes, and this must be clearly expressed, and that 7.3d of the bill should be removed as it is contradictory and the purpose is served by the earlier paragraphs. They also wished to add a provision that prohibiting garnishee orders against the money administered by the fund. The DHF agreed that the words "or to cover any costs related to any litigation against a political party or independent representative" should be deleted, as that is allowing these funds to be used for litigation as long as it is an inter-party dispute. Parliament legal section also agreed essentially that this needed to be redrafted to be more specific about the intention, and added that the garnishee orders is a substantive submission and would require further investigation and would possibly require calling for further public comment. So essentially arguing that it shouldn't be added at this stage in the bill. Then going to Clause 11, dealing with the prohibited donation sources. So the clause dealing with not parties or independent candidates not receiving donations which they suspect to be the proceeds of crime or from foreign donors, with the exception of that foreign funding being for training. And it is argued that the relevant sections from the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act should rather be incorporated rather than specific prohibitions in the bill or in the act. And that training funding from foreign entities should also be available for support staff of independent candidate or independent representatives because they don't have members. They only have their single member. And then that the bribery prohibition falls short of international law requirements. Parliament Legal said that the definition of donation and donation in kind specifically covers money, assets, and services paid or lent to a political party and now independent, whereas the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act, PRECA, considers gratification. And so they deal with overlapping with different issues. The IEC argued that the Commission views this as a consequential amendment and submits that training and development may be extended to support staff of independents. And DHA also believe that it's a consequential amendment and that both candidates and representative independents should be included. And the Department has the view that the submission goes further to do so. Then moving to Clause 13 on the disclosure. the disclosure of donations to political parties, independent candidates and independent representatives. The submitters argue that an amendment should be introduced requiring companies and trusts to disclose their ownership information when donating to a political party in the interest of transparency. They argue that the repeated reliance on the intention of behind the donation would be difficult to investigate and police, and that the Constitutional Court ruled that the Executive Ethics Code was unconstitutional due to failure to require disclosures of donations to inter-party election campaigns, therefore arguing that this principle, this clause should refer to also to internal elect, inter-party campaign funding, and that there were also arguments that the disclosure threshold should be removed entirely and that all donations should be disclosed. The IC viewed that these submissions were substantive and would need to be deliberated and the subject of a policy debate. The DHA disagreed that the introduction of a new clause requiring companies and trusts to disclose their beneficial ownership information was beyond the scope of the Party Political Funding Act, and that the issue of intra-party donations is not covered by the Party Funding Act, and that shouldn't be entertained in the bill at this stage. Then moving on to Clause 14, this prohibits donations to a member of a political party as opposed to directly to the party itself in the interest of receiving or influencing the awarding of tenders, licenses, and the relaxation of conditions. And submitters argue that the repeated reliance on intention will again be difficult to police, and that independent candidates and representatives should be included to also prevent undue influence. DHA agreed that the independent candidates represented included in this provision, and Parliament Legal agreed with the inclusion of the new subsection, as it provides that no person or entity may make a donation to a political party with the expectation or political that the party or member influences an award. However, independent candidates should be included. What is of concern is that there's no legitimate reason for the deletion of the original Section 10 of the Act, which prevented any person or entity from delivery of a donation to a member of a political party other than for political party purposes. And essentially that donations and donation in kind is specific to money, services, and assets. And donation in kind is not a gift. This is a wide interpretation of the definition. Gifting would only be a donation, and therefore the use of political parties and should a donation be given to a member and that member does not use it for political party purposes, only then are they in contravention of Section 10. It will be more clear how this plays out when we deal with the B bill. Clause 17, reporting obligations. The submitters argued that registered political parties' receipts and accruals are voted from normal tax, and there's no such provision for independent candidates, and that the requirement that an independent candidate should register a bank account in their own name means that other types of tax exemption are also not available. And they recommended that persons intending to contest an upcoming election as an independent may register their intention to do so with the Commission at any time after the preceding election, and further inform the Commission of a vehicle established to run the campaign, its banking details, as well as its relationship to the candidate. And from the date of registration, the candidate should be treated equally with registered parties for all purposes, campaigning, taxation, disclosure. IEC agreed that this should be amended to include a clause that provides for the registration of intention or aspirant independent candidates at the time when the intention is made. And the Parliament Legal that this provision moves beyond the purpose of the bill, which is to include independent candidates, and this requires policy consideration. And it refers to the Electoral Act, not the Party Funding Act. Independent bank accounts. The clause includes that all independent candidates must deposit all donations received into a bank account registered in their name and keep records in that regard. The submitters argued that the granting of tax exemptions allows diverse persons as campaign structures rather than just sole proprietors, as is suggested by the bank account. So essentially that if it's in their own name, then they're going to a particular legal category which may exempt them from tax exemption, as well as confusing their private and public, or their private and party political fund reporting and funding. And that the section ignores the operational and financial requirements of running a campaign as an independent candidate, and that should rather ensure that personal accounts are separate from those used for donation for party funding. The legal section proposal is that the independent must keep a separate account with the bank registered in the Banks Act, and the DHA agreed, as well as the IEC. And as that they will be required to make declarations upon certification as independent candidates. Repayments of unspent money. So this is in the case of independents and parties that need to return money, candidates that either leave parliament or are deceased or whatever reason. And that the submitters argued that this is impractical with respect to political parties, as they can easily fill vacancies, unlike independents who are single representatives. They must submit that the new Party for Funding Act should apply only to independent representatives, and the IEC agreed, and that this is consequential only to independents and not political parties. The investigative jurisdiction of the IEC, that the chief executive officer has a view that the substance of complaints could be investigated for both parties and independent candidates. And the submitters argue that to include independent representatives for consistency and to ensure legal or equal oversight. They also urge the bill to be examined for consistent use of the term independent and candidate and representative. The Section 14 of the Party Funding Act refers to compliance only by political parties and independent candidates, but not independent representatives. The IEC and the DHA agreed with the submission of the bill, and that it only refers to independent candidates and not independent representatives, and that the provisions should be rewritten to ensure that there's no ambiguity. The legal services argue that there is some ambiguity, as this section could be interpreted widely to mean that once an independent candidate gains a seat, the provision does not apply to them. Then Section 24, or Clause 24, on penalties for contravention of the Party Funding Act. The submitters argued that the bill should instead seek to streamline and standardize the manner in which parties receive donations, empower the Electoral Commission to monitor bank accounts, and to refer any suspected breaches of the Funding Act to the NPA, and allow for sharing of financial information about political parties' bank accounts with the Financial Intelligence Center. The submitters argued that only the maximum donation limit and the total donation limit will be subjected to the three factors listed in Clause 24B, which are the criteria for disclosure. And the disclosure thresholds must be subject to these factors in line with the memorandum of the object of the bill. And that clause 24.1b should include the prevalence of public sector corruption, the importance of transparency, and include the right in section 19 of the Constitution. And the President should be required to consult with the Commission before making regulations affecting disclosure thresholds or limits and donations. Other submissions argue that you should equalize the treatment of ICs and IRs with parties regarding permissible and prohibited donations. And the provisions of this clause are wholly ineffectual without enforcement mechanism. The bill does not specify how new donations are to be monitored or by whom. Legal services initially agreed, including the reference to independent candidates. However, upon closer analysis, the preventing a person from donating to a member of a political party instead of a political party itself meant the legal question was now whether it would be applicable to independent candidates as they are one person. There would always only be a donation made to the independent candidate and not another person. The IEC considered this as a substantive rather than consequential submission, and that the IEC's investigative capacity must be strengthened. There must be debate put before Parliament. And they also suggest that perhaps reference made to Chapter 3 on the direct funding of political parties in the provision should be removed. They further request that the fine amount of $200,000 should be removed from the Act and replaced in the regulations. Keeping in the Act would make it too onerous to adjust that when the need arises. The DHA agreed with the inclusion of independent candidates and representatives in the clause. Granting the clause 26, granting the President discretion in determining regulations. The submitters argued that there is strong opposition to this clause, arguing that it undermines parliamentary accountability and risk manipulation of the thresholds and limits. They advocate for retaining full parliamentary control and delaying the clause until proper public participation on any such amendment. The amendment to the clause of the Party Funding Act contained in Schedule 2, which would introduce unnecessary uncertainty in regulations of the private funding of political parties and independent representatives, and the proposed amendment in SEC would remove the requirement that the National Assembly resolve to instruct the President. To issues of regulations. The proposed alternatives were extending the mandate of the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, including the Minister of Finance in the consultation process, requiring that the President, beg your pardon, include the Minister of Finance in the consultation process, require the President to consider objective measures and norms and standards from other democracies, or trying the thresholds and limits to external objective measures such as the consumer price index or the minimum wage. Legal section, it could be argued that the President has been assigned plenary power when he used to only act on the resolution of the National Assembly. Furthermore, there's no definition for minister referred to in the Party Funding Act, indicating that in consultation is problematic. It should rather be after consultation. And this distinction is important, that it would require the approval of a Parliament rather than just a consultation with Parliament. The IEC and DHA argue that in order to address the powers of the President to make regulations in Clause 26A, that they should rather go back to the original formulation, which required that the President acting on the resolution of the NA made by proclamation in the Gazette make regulations in respect of the matters contemplated in the submission on the disclosure limits. And this formulation, together with other safeguards, such as the amount of money previously appropriated by Acts of Parliament, the effects of inflation, and the costs associated with participating as a political party or independent candidate. Then clause 7 and 29, which deal with the funding formulas and limits. So in terms of what is given as a proportional or versus an equitable share of donations, and what is the upper limit of donations versus what is the lower limit of for disclosure of donations. The submitters argue that increasing the proportional allocation to 90% and reducing the equitable allocation to 10% will have negative consequences for smaller parties and independent representatives who rely more on the equitable allocation. And they call for retaining the existing formula and rejecting the amendments. The current formulation is 30% for equitable and 60% for proportional. Inconsistencies and contradictions between the proposed amendments in Section 24 and Regulation 2, since regulations may not contradicting their enabling legislation, and this would therefore potentially make the provisions ultra vires. The proposed amendment to Regulations 7 and 9 of Schedule 2 should be rejected. And the amendments to the regulations also make no mention of the consultation of the President is required to have the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs and the Minister of Home Affairs, which is introduced in Clause 26. South Africa's experience with state capture is illustrative of the importance of adequately regulating the relationship between private interests and politics. And the disclosure threshold of 100,000 Rand and a maximum donation of limit of 15 million per year from a single donor should be lower, closer to what most countries have, which range from around 2 million as a maximum donation to as little as 150,000 Rand in Uruguay. There should be a review of the existing practices around public funding of political parties to develop a policy framework regulating all public funding of political parties to ensure that there is adequate oversight and accountability of spending funds to prevent abuse. The amendment of Clause 29 to replace 90% with 100%. This was another submission, alternative perspective, and as well as the deletion of Clause 29.2 in its entirety from it. And the alternative proposal also was that that every independent or party who wins a seat in Parliament gets 0.25% of the funds for a seat that they occupy, and that the current formula of 67 and 33 developed when there were a few small parties in Parliament. Participability now is many more small parties and independents. And they also argue that the provincial legislature, the number of members of the provincial legislature will determine the split. If there are 50 MPLs for each independent MPL, would be allocated 2% of the funding, and each party would receive 2% times the number of MPLs for that party. The DHA agreed that the suggestion is a better one in that it does not result in negative unintended consequences of the two-thirds and one-third split, and it takes care of the concerns raised regarding the 90-10 split. The IC were, because of the entrance of new players in the political space, this is consequential. The committee must therefore deliberate on the matter and reach finality, and smaller independent representatives are likely to be adversely impacted. This might raise discontentment leading to possible court cases. The legal services argue that this is the substantive amendment, and the amendment reverts to the original formula. If the change in formula unfairly discriminates independent representatives, the committee must be mindful of the Harkson versus Lane case, where the provision differentiates between people or categories of people. If so, it does not bear rational connection to the legitimate government purpose, and that the budget allocation for the adjusted budget in December was according to the new, was according to the old formula, and how is it to be administered in the new formula? Just a concern if the formulation is changed, how the funding would be impacted in terms of the fiscus. Then clause 38, and on the broadcasting of election and airtime allocated to different kinds of candidates. There was one proposal that the principle of proportionality based on representation in parliament and the provincial legislatures for funding should be cascaded to provisions for broadcasting instead of treating all parties and candidates equally. And secondly, that amendments made to the constitution in section 57, 58 and 59 of the Communications Act do not insert independent representatives under the provisions made for the public on broadcast, as well as all these various other sections do not include independent representatives. The Department of Communications came in on this one and indicated that they felt that the amendments to the Communications Act were consequential and that it impacts on independent candidates would be considered in if they were changed, and they were in agreement with this. The IC felt there was need for input from ICASA, and DHA agreed with the suggestion to include independent representatives in the Communications Act. Then on the funding of representative political parties by legislatures, the submissions were that Section 23 stipulates the responsibility of accounting office to report annually. Neither of these makes independent reference to independent candidates. And the legal services are agreed. And then IEC and DHA agreed that Section 23.2 on disclosure of Sections 57 and 116 of the Parliamentary and Legislative Allocations should be equally applied to independent or independent representatives as it does to political parties. This in reference to a section of the not included in the clause, but it's in the Party Funding Act. So a suggestion for additional clause. And then Section 27 of the Electoral Act, which is also not included in the original bill, requiring declarations signed by the authorized representatives. And the contribution there, or the submission there, was that Section 27.2CB must be amended prior to the 24 elections to ensure that there is parity amongst different categories so that elections are constitutionally sound. And the Department, Parliament and IEC have filed explanatory affidavits to assist the Constitutional Court in arriving at a fair decision. I think Talana will correct me, but yes, it's in relation to the signatures required by independent candidates versus new political parties. The court case, the courts ruled essentially that independent candidates would only need 1,000 signatures, but there was a subsequent case that viewed that this should also apply to new political parties, but the courts ruled that it's not in the interest of justice to amend this further provision at this stage. And so at this stage, new political parties still require 15% of the seats from a previous election in signatures in order to be able to be registered as a candidate. And then clause 31, voting, when not in the area where you registered. And the IC suggested a formulation that a voter may only vote in the election for the regional seats in the National Assembly and for the provincial legislature, if that specified voting district is situated in a province which is in which the vote is registered. The alternative proposal is that as long as the prescribed notification is done in time, the voters should be able to cast all their votes at a place they indicate they will be. The question for the IEC is what the logistical security and financial implications would be to send 9 different ballots to 9 different provinces, potentially also from outside of the country. So this clause essentially arguing that you only get a national vote if you indicate you're going to be outside of the province, or if you don't indicate and you arrive anywhere else in the province that you registered. The submitters argued that why is a voter not permitted to vote for regional seats and provincial legislatures in another voting district if they aren't on the voters' roll for the provinces? And they questioned whether the redraft may be necessary for the use or, so either national or provincial. And Parliament Legal indicated that understood the purpose of the clause was the allocation of seats per region is determined by the registered population in the region. It follows that only voters in that region may influence the outcome of the election for that region. However, a greater consideration could be given to submitters' concerns regarding the drafting of the section. IEC suggested a reformulation that such vote may only vote in the election for the regional seat in the National Assembly in the Schedule 1A and for the provincial legislature if that specified voting district is situated in the province and the vote is registered. And Section 24 is no longer available for application at voting stations. It is now only available by pre-notification by a date regulated in the election timetable, and the voter must indicate that other voting stations at which they will be cast. In the circumstances, it is no longer necessary to keep surplus ballots at all the 23,000 voting stations. And then there were several Electoral Commission Act missions that were not included, and they just needed to refer to independent candidates. And these will be covered by Solana, if I'm not mistaken. And these are just merely technical consequential amendments, as indicated there. And same being that there were several technical omissions in those specified sections there in the Electronic Communications Act. And there was agreement from the Department of Communications, Digital Technologies, just on technical definitions. And in terms of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, there were also consequential amendments needed to 65(1), which speaks to regulations relating to the funding of political parties. So another consequential technical amendment. And that's the actual final submission we have. So thank you, Chairperson. That's a summary of the initial debates around the bill. And then there was a series of other debates prior to and leading to the A bill, which again was amended after further debate, which then led to the B bill, which Talana will now cover. But we'll take your guidance, Chairperson, if we deal with this first or if we go directly to Talana and then debate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Adam. We'll go then to Talana to make the presentation. And thereafter we'll take the process forward. Talana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I take it that everybody can see my screen.
Is it possible to make it a little bigger?
A bit big again.
Yes. Yeah. The font
is efficient. Let's see. Sorry. Is that a bit better? Is that better?
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Adam. As Adam indicated, what he represented was a summary of the deliberations, not deliberations, the submissions that fed into the agreement by the Portfolio Committee. So, as you know, following the various submissions and the contributions from the independent, the IEC and from the department, the bill significantly changed, and this led to the drafting of the A list and then the B bill, which is in front of you, which has been introduced to the NCLP. The long title of the bill will obviously needed to be amended, and there were various amendments added to the long title, and this is because there had been amendments to the bill and the long title needed to reflect this. And now moving on to the amendments. The first amendment we have is on page 3, honorable members. This amendment is to the inclusion of donation and donation in kind. Submitters highlighted to the committee that donations and donation in kind do not include independent representatives and independent candidates in the definition. And this was therefore corrected by the Portfolio Committee and included. So therefore, two new inclusions were included in the definition, donation and donation in kind. The second amendment would be the amendment to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. The bill was introduced, which contained an amendment to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. It amended it to read as the Multi-Party and Independent Democracy Fund. The committee, on taking advice from various submitters, agreed that Multi-Party Democracy Fund was sufficiently reflected the inclusion of independent candidates, and that there was no need to amend it to include independent candidates. And therefore, the committee decided to revert back to the original reading of the fund, which is the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. Therefore, any reference to multi-party democracy and independence multi-party and independence democracy fund was removed from the introduced bill, and throughout the bill, therefore, the A-list contained this removal of the reference to multi-party democracy fund. The third amendment to the definitions would be the amendment to independent candidate and independent representative. Submitters raised concerns with the committee that independent candidate and independent representative were not correct definitions, that they were, as Adam pointed out, open to various forms of interpretation. And on the advice from CLSO, from Legal Services, the Portfolio Committee reverted to the definition of independent candidates as contained in the Electoral Act. Therefore, throughout the introduced bill, the A-list amended this definition of independent candidates and independent representatives. Our next amendment can be found on page 6. So this amendment was proposed by the IEC. They proposed that a proviso be added to paragraph C. Paragraph 3C deals with money that is funds that is used by an independent candidate. And funds used by an independent candidate cannot be used for acquiring immovable property. However, the same proviso, except where the right and or interest in the immovable property is to be used for the performance of duties of an independent representative, can be found in 7.2c of the Act. So 7.2c provided that political parties can use funds for purchasing immovable property for political purposes. However, there was no parity in the provision that did not allow independent candidates to not purchase immovable property. Therefore, the IEC suggested that we include this proviso, that it was obviously an omission from the drafter, that this was not an entirely new policy decision, and the department agreed that it was the policy intention to always include a proviso, as independent representatives are allowed to purchase property for political purposes. And therefore, this is the reason why the committee resolved to include this provision. If you look at D, The committee also agreed to on consultation and on receiving submissions that this paragraph did not seem right. Previously, it read that funds may not be used for personal use or to cover any costs related to litigation against the political party or the independent representative. The committee agreed that it was not clear what the purpose of this paragraph was, but it was presumed that it would carry the same weight as Section 7.2D of the Political Party Funding Act, which provided that political parties could not use funds to defray legal costs relating to internal party disputes. Legal services then raised it with the committee that independent representatives would not have internal party disputes by virtue of them being one person. Therefore, the resolution was that it was agreed to amend this paragraph to reflect that money could not be used for any personal use. So funds received by an independent candidate could not be used for any personal use. And they felt that this was a more succinct version of what was intended by the department. The next amendment, honourable members, is found on page 7. So it is an amendment to section 10. As Adam explained, the previous section 10 allowed for the spending of money, the use of money to avoid the prohibition of donations with the intention of soliciting some sort of bribe or some sort of influence in a tender. And the advice from CLSO was that independent candidates were not included in the provision, and also that there was no justification for the deletion of the original 10. The original 10 provided that, similar to the intended section 10, that you could not use donations for purposes other than political purposes, but it excluded the main intention of section 10, which was that a person could not give a donation to a member of a political party instead of the political party. Therefore, on consideration from the advice from CLSO and the input from the department, the committee resolved to reject section clause 14 and revert to the original section 10. And therefore, the committee felt that the proposed amendment detracted from the intention of the original section, which was to prevent any person from donating to a member of a political party and other than for political party purposes. The committee agreed to revert to the original section 10 and simply included reference to independent representatives and independent candidates. This would also still maintain the intention of the policy decision by the department that no person may make a donation to a person other than for political party purposes or political purposes. The next amendment is on page 8. Submitters felt that this paragraph did not make clear that the bank account of an independent representative needed to be separate from its own personal bank account. And therefore, the committee resolved to make this very clear by introducing this amendment, and therefore it now reflects the intention that a bank account needs to be separate from your personal account. The next amendment is on page 9, and that is that there was a proposal from the IEC. And this was included because of an omission by the drafter. A similar provision is included in the amendment to Section 12 of the Act, 12.1F to be specific, which provided that an unrepresented political party does not have to appoint an auditor, but will simply need to submit all statements and books of records of an account with an affidavit to the Commission. This inclusion by the IEC, or proposed inclusion, was to bring parity between independent candidates and unrepresented political parties. The provision section provides for an independent candidate to prepare statements. So you can see in paragraph B above, the independent candidate was always supposed to prepare a statement. But there seemed to be a gap in the provision as they would prepare the statement, but then they would do nothing with that. So it was then the intention of the drafter to always submit those statements, but there obviously was an omission, and therefore this provision was included. And members, just to highlight that the new provisions that we included that I've just mentioned so far, these are not entirely new provisions, but obviously simple omissions. They aren't extending the scope of the bill. The bill's intention is always to include independent representatives and independent candidates. These were just simple omissions that the drafter missed and therefore needed to be included, and also to bring parity between independent candidates, independent represented candidates, and unrepresented political parties. The next amendment can be found on page 10. This was a simple amendment. It should have read independent representatives in the original introduced bill. It read independent candidates, but only independent representatives could create vacancies, and therefore this was a mistake, an error, and therefore the committee resolved to correct it. The next amendment is also an omission. There were a number of references throughout the bill that should have been referenced as independent representatives and independent candidates. In this instance, only independent candidates were referenced, and therefore the department agreed that this was an omission and that the policy decision was always to include independent representatives as well as independent candidates to this section, and therefore the committee resolved to include this. The next amendment can be found on page 11 of the bill. So this was proposed by the IEC. The IEC advised that the amount of 200,000 should be removed from the bill. As this is in line with drafting prescripts, a fine amount should rarely be included in a principal act, but rather included in regulations. And the committee agreed with the submission from the IEC and removed the reference in both these paragraphs, this section and this paragraph, to the 200,000. The next amendment is also found on page 12, and this is to clause 26. This was an omission. This is a new clause as well. This was an omission from the drafting. Submitters pointed out that section 23 of the Act should have been amended to include independent representatives. Section 23 of the Act was not amended in the introduced bill. The Parliamentary Legal Services agreed with submitters that as per the New Nation judgment, section 23 of the Political Party Act should have included a reference to independent representatives, as sections 57(2) and 1162 of the Constitution include independent representatives as per the New Nation judgment. And therefore the committee agreed that this be included. Once again, committee, honourable members, I'd like to point out that although this is a new provision, it does not extend the scope of the bill. The intention of the bill is always to include independent representatives and independent candidates, and this was an omission in the drafting. The next amendment is to clause 27, and this the committee received from various submissions and advice from CLSO and advice from the IEC and agreement from the IEC and the department, that the committee resolved to revert back to the original wording of section 24, which is the regulations section. This section deals with how regulations are made to the Political Party Funding Act. The committee agreed to revert to the previous wording, which provided that the president, acting on resolution of the National Assembly, would make regulations. The next amendment is on page 13, and this is simply to amend the reference to independence as to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. As I explained earlier, members, the reference was multi-party and independence democracy fund, and this should just read multi-party democracy fund. The next amendment is to schedule, is to the amendment to Schedule 2, and this is the removal of independent candidates over here and replacing it with independent representatives. So this is also an omission or error that was picked up in the drafting. The submitter raised this and the department agreed that it was a mission. The correct reference should be independent representatives, as it is the intention of the committee of the department that only independent representatives receive funds and not independent candidates. So originally it read independent candidates, and this was therefore amended to read independent representatives. The next amendment is an amendment that was raised by submitters. Submitters had said that there was a disconnect between this section, which deals with the making of regulations, and the regulations section that was in section 24, which said that the president would do so on resolution of the National Assembly. Previously, this amendment said the president would do so after a resolution of Parliament. So in order to bring continuity and to for the bill to read together, this was the committee resolved to change this to National Assembly. The next amendment can be found on page 15. Submitters raised that this section was not clear, that it could not read correctly and did not show the intention that a person could only vote in an election for regional or provincial legislature seats where they were registered to vote. On recommendation from the IEC, who proposed a redraft of this section, the committee then resolved that they would revert, they would agree to include the new drafting of the section, and therefore the intention of what the section should, what the section should provide for was more clear on consideration of the inclusion by the IEC. The next amendment is to the Electoral Commission Act. As I mentioned earlier, the committee resolved to revert to the definitions that were in the Electoral Act, and this reflects throughout the bill, especially in the Electoral Commission Act, the Electoral Act, and the Political Party Money Act. So therefore, this was included over here. The next amendment was an omission as well from, this should have been amended, but it was also a sort of omission by the drafter. It is a new provision. It was included, but the intention, as the department pointed out, was that all references where needed to be, where independent representatives needed to be referenced, should have been amended in the Electoral Commission Act. And this was obviously raised by submitters that Section 6 was missed and should have been amended. And therefore, the committee resolved to include independent representatives in this section. The next amendment is to page 16, where the election period was also another omission. It should have been included because this definition makes reference to political parties, and it should also make reference to independent representatives. And therefore, it was included in the amendment. And once again, this is not a new provision, similar to this provision. It's not a new provision. It is a new provision, but it is not removed from the intention of what the bill seeks to achieve, which is to include all references to independent candidates and independent representatives. This is simply an omission by the drafter. It should have been included, and it was agreed by the department. This was always the policy intention. Similarly, the reference to independent candidates, independent representatives, independent candidates and independent representatives, the definitions should be the definitions as provided in the Electoral Act, and therefore the committee resolved to change these definitions. Since the following submissions are, the following changes, which are on page 17, are omissions that were raised by submitters. The Act should have referred to the Electoral Commission Act, Electronic Communications Act, should have referred to independent representatives and independent candidates at section 57, as well as section 58, and as well as section 59. And as Adam pointed out, a number of submitters raised that these were omissions and that only that the Act only, the bill only referred to independent candidates, and therefore the committee resolved to include independent representatives and independent candidates, as that was the policy decision by the department, and it was a simple omission in the drafting. And then on page 19, the committee resolved, as I said earlier, to revert back to the, not to revert, but to amend the definition of independent representatives to reflect the definition as including the Political Party Funding Act, which references the Electoral Act in its definition of independent candidates. And finally, honourable members, the last amendment is in a new provision at section 65 of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. It is also an omission of the drafter, as this, as paragraph if should have been amended, as there was a reference to political parties and there should have been a reference to independent representatives. And therefore the committee resolved to include this. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, honorable chair. I trust that this provided some sort of summary for honourable members to understand what was amended in the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Talana, and for this presentation. I'm going to allow the Department of Home Affairs, if they have any addition they would like to make specifically with regard to the amendments that were effected by the Portfolio Committee. The Home Affairs, DM, I'm not sure who in your team, yourself or who in your team would want to say something.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to the members of the Select Committee. I am here with Advocate Malakade from the Department of Home Affairs. I think that the matters that we had raised are thoroughly indicated in the two reports. But just to indicate that in the main, we were dealing with consequential amendments as a result of the inclusion of independence in all the other acts. I think it's mainly just the introduction of independence. Where there will be an issue will be around the issue of the Political Party Funding Act, which as a result of the inclusion of independence, it meant that we had to go a great, we had to do a bit more there. But we made sure that we stick with the constitution around the issue of political party funding by making sure that the split is both equitable as well as proportional. I think the other matters are as indicated. Thank you very much, Chair. Unless if maybe we can also give Advocate Malakade an opportunity. Maybe he might have something to say, Chair, through you.
Thank you, Honourable DM. Advocate Malakade.
Good morning, Chair, members, and colleagues on the platform. Chair, I have no further additions.
Awesome. Great. And thank you very much, DM and Advocate. Members, we've received the presentation from our content advisor in terms of what came out of our consultations with regard to the public hearings and the public participation process. And also legal provided us with a presentation on the amendments that came out of the process of the portfolio committee, and that was adopted by the National Assembly. The department obviously is comfortable with that, with what was presented. And to emphasize that also what legal says in their presentation, especially in relation to the amendments, is that these amendments made by the portfolio committee were largely omissions, amendments that did not extend the scope of the ball and to bring parity between independent candidates, independent representatives and political parties, as well as some of the omissions in the ball were as a result of errors in drafting, and that was being corrected. And obviously, other members, I'm going to open it up for if there are any general comments and questions for members for now, but also to indicate to yourself that we will hold in the next meeting, I think we will have a more structured discussion based on the two presentations, the public comments as well as the amendments that were proposed. But for now, if you have any general comments and or questions that you would want to pose, I would then open it up to yourself if you have any. Okay. All right. I'm not seeing any hand raised. Okay. All right. All members, I think that you want time as well to reflect on the two presentations, and that's why I'm saying that in our next meeting, we will then deal with deliberations in a much more structured manner. I just want to also remind members that in terms of the joint process that we undertook, obviously we had run a joint public participation process, and in terms of the amendments that were effected to the bill, what is also coming to the fore is that these are more technical and amendments and or making corrections to the bill. I think I've also summarized it just now in terms of what the presentation made by legal in terms of the tax amendments that were being effected to the bill. And if members are happy, we can then continue with deliberations on the ball as we move forward. So in our next meeting, then we will have a more structured deliberation based on the two presentations. Being a Section 75 ball, obviously we have to consider also the amendments that were made by the portfolio committee. And members, I think what we'll do, and I think Gershwin will then provide yourself with a program in terms of the frequency of the meeting. Members will recall that this is quite an urgent call, and we do have a looming deadline with regard to this piece of legislation, given that just over 2 months an election will be held. So yeah, we will actually then move with speed and try to be as we will try and be as efficient as we possibly can in terms of deliberating on the various matters. So maybe please take this time to refamiliarize yourself with the issues at hand, and that in the next meeting we can have a much more structured discussion. Our members, let me thank the content advisor, the parliamentary legal advisor, for the presentations on the outcome of public participation and the B version of the bill, as well as the Department of Home Affairs. Like I said, on members, given the urgent nature of this bill, we will have to meet more frequently. And a program will then be sent out to members as well in terms of the available possibilities for meeting on this bill. In the next meeting, then we will further deliberate on the ball. Thank you very much, all members. I think we've come to the end of the meeting, and thank you, DM and your team and the Parliamentary Legal Services and Adam, I'm specifically isolating you because you're a content advisor in another committee, but also you do provide a support. Thank you very much, and thank you very much to Gershwin and Bia for the support provided on this side. Thanks, honourable members. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Chairperson.